Our third case this morning is 2021-130, Neurocom Communication Services Incorporated at all and versus the Cincinnati Insurance Company, Cincinnati Casualty Company, and the Cincinnati Indemnity Company. For the petitioner, Mr. Litchfield.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Chief Justice O'Connor, my name is Daniel Litchfield. I represent the petitioners, the Cincinnati Insurance Company, as well as Cincinnati Casualty and Cincinnati Indemnity. We're here about a question of law that was certified to this court by Judge Pearson from the Northern District of Ohio. But the key thing here, as we see in the briefing, is the following question is framed. What is the meaning of this key phrase, direct accidental physical loss or accidental physical damage to property? And it's very important in that context to recognize that this court has not yet addressed those particular words in that or a similar phrase. But it has long established principles of contract construction that are applied to insurance policies that are very instructive here. I'd like to focus on the rule that a plain and ordinary meaning be given to words, and that the words be read in context and not out of context, and that all the words in the operative phrase be given their meaning. There's also the rule that the court should not reach results interpreting a contract that lead to absurd consequences. Also, I'd like to focus on the core purpose of the contract, which is important to be considered in the context of interpreting the contract. First, plain and ordinary meaning. We need to look at all the words, in particular the word physical. The word physical in this key phrase modifies both the words loss and the word damage. The essence of the arguments that are arrayed against us is to either directly or indirectly remove that word physical from the operative phrase, but it's critical to it and needs to be considered in the context. This is a property insurance policy. That's an important part of the context. It's not some other type of policy that addresses pandemics or something of that nature. This policy applies to physical loss or damage to property such that there's a need for repair, replacement, or rebuilding of the property. That's the standard beginning of this that everybody forgets about. They jump right to the business income feature of the policy, which is an adjunct coverage. The main coverage is to repair, rebuild, or replace property where there's direct physical loss or damage to the property. Nothing like that's claimed here, by the way. Nobody's seeking a new piece of furniture, new equipment, repair to equipment, or anything like that. We've jumped right to this adjunct coverage for direct for business income coverage.
So it's nothing like plexiglass. It's nothing like plexiglass or having to retrofit the office to bring everybody back.
No, because that's not repairing or replacing the property. That is trying to keep people separated for social distancing, as we see out here behind me with the chairs apart from each other. The gist of this terrible pandemic is the transmittal of the disease from person to person, and that's what the plexiglass is designed to take care of. That's what separating the chairs is designed to take care of.
That's not part of the claim, correct? Just the last...
That's not part of this claim.
Right.
No, it is not. The rule against absurd results is something that I think is very important to touch bases on here. From when I grew up, we called these things germs. Maybe a kinder, simpler time, I don't know. But I think of it in terms of germs, which are always with us, have always been out and about. Flu is a virus. We have the flu season every year. We don't repair or replace property to deal with the flu every year. COVID is another kind of virus, certainly more destructive, more harmful to people, but a virus nevertheless.
But the flu doesn't necessitate or precipitate action by the government to curtail operation of businesses for the time period that it did.
To my knowledge, it hasn't. Certainly, the record doesn't reflect any assertion or allegation to that effect.
Does it matter in any way to this discussion that there were directives from the state of Ohio, the health department, for you know, any part of the claim?
It only matters, Your Honor, in the context of explaining why government orders are not direct physical loss or damage to property, which is what is claimed here.
Okay.
We live with government orders all the time, and most government orders that I'm familiar with as a business person do cost businesses money. It's part of the cost of doing business in a regulated or at least partially regulated economy. That's just the way things are. That doesn't mean, however, that the cost of complying with those government orders should be translated into direct physical loss or damage to property. That would be, you know, frankly, quite astounding, and I think gets us toward the end of a chain of events that one might fairly characterize as absurd results. It would be absurd, for instance, to determine that as a matter of law, a building that suffered direct physical loss or damage because a virus is generally present in the community, just as the flu is generally present in the community during a season every year. I think it would be absurd to determine as a matter of law that a building suffered direct physical loss or damage because a government issued orders regulating the use of that building or keeping people apart or keeping fewer people in the space than they otherwise like to have in the space and all of that.
So if the government took over the building and said, we're going to turn your building into a mini hospital for overflow because our hospitals are full, that would not be covered by the policy?
No, it wouldn't, because that wouldn't be direct physical loss or damage to the building. Now, that might raise other legal issues, to be sure, such as the government seizure of property and compensation for that. Also, there's an exclusion in the policy that you would get to at that point in time that's not necessary to talk about with regard to the threshold issue of direct physical loss or damage to property. That exclusion includes government seizures of property, eminent domain situations. Which is what I think Your Honor's hypothetical really implicates. So it would be inappropriate to have these sorts of absurd results result, you know, from finding, and I think elasticizing this policy to try to create coverage under a property policy for something that's fundamentally not about direct physical loss or damage to property.
Counsel, let me ask you, one of the exclusions in this all-risk policy is for bacteria, and which does not cause a physical altercation to property, right?
No, that's actually not necessarily true. Bacteria is different from viruses in a lot of ways, and the exclusion you're referring to, you know, fundamentally deals with a range of things, principally mold. And mold is different than a virus in that it's well known that given a fuel and the right kind of material like wood, mold can actually propagate and eat its way through the material, which is different from what we're talking about with the allegations here. The allegation in Neuro's complaint, indeed, is that if any of this were to get onto property, such as on this lectern, it dies of its own accord within hours and at most within a day. That's in the record. And as we've seen here in court, efforts are made to wipe up the surface, which is another way to address the potential that the virus is on a surface. Matter of fact, seeing that, I was reminded of my very first real job in life where I had to pay taxes and Social Security. I was a dishwasher at a restaurant. One of my jobs every night was to mop the floor. Never occurred to me that I was addressing direct physical loss or damage to the floor. No more so than I think the wiping of this lectern addressed direct physical loss or damage to the lectern. There's a difference between maintenance and cleaning on the one hand and addressing direct physical loss or damage on the other. Two great cases to look to for this exact proposition, one from the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, and that's Mama Joe's. Deals with a claim for property coverage where there was dust or debris on an outdoor seating area at a restaurant. And the court said, no, you can clean it up. The other is a case from the appellate court here in Ohio, Mastalone, which we cite and discuss at some length in the briefing, and the finding there that if you can clean, and that did involve mold on an exterior surface, but the fact was that mold could be cleaned, and the finding was if you can clean it, that was not direct loss to the property, which I think was the relevant language in that policy. Now, an overwhelming number of cases have agreed with Cincinnati's position here, hundreds and hundreds of cases since May 4th of 2020 when the first one came down in the context of an injunction hearing in the Southern District of New York, hundreds of them. Key among those cases are 22 from United States federal courts of appeals or from state courts of appeals. All of them find on similar facts involving the same identical or substantially similar policy language in a way that's entirely supportive of Cincinnati's position here. There are no dissents in any of these decisions. Six of those 22 decisions come from a combination of courts of appeal in Ohio, the Sanzo case and the Nailnook case, as well as decisions applying Ohio law from the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, and particularly I'd commend to the court Judge Sutton's opinion in the Santos case, which is one of the leading cases in this area, frankly, around the country. All that said, I think it's important to take a moment to do a deeper dive into the actual policy language and structure of this policy, which is so important to refuting the types of claims that are being asserted against us. This policy is first and foremost to recover for direct physical loss or damage to property, both direct loss or damage and physical loss or damage. This court has held over the years in Galatas, the AKC case more recently, in the Hybud case about 25 years ago, that we should not ignore words in relevant policy language here. We should not ignore the word physical. Nero's complaint does not ask for, as I said a moment ago, anything for the cost to repair, replace, or rebuild any of its property. It's all sitting there. Based on the complaint that we have, based on the record that we have, it's all sitting there perfectly fine. They want the lost business income that was caused by complying with those orders from the Department of Health as well as from the governor. This is a business income coverage extension, so it rides along as an additive factor for the fundamental property coverage that the policy supplies. A paradigmatic case would be fire or windstorm. If the windows are blown out, you got a cost to repair or replace those windows. If it's going to take a while to repair or replace them, then there's a suspension of the operations there, and during the period of time that they're repairing or replacing, the business income coverage is paid. But the core is that there's some physicality to what happened to the building, that the windows were blown out. If the place burns to the ground, same thing, just a different order of magnitude. So the policy provides this business income coverage if first there's a suspension of operations, and that's not really an issue here. They allege that they suspended their operations pursuant to the orders from the governor and the Department of Health. But second, it's very clear that that suspension needs to be caused by direct physical loss or direct physical damage to property at the premises. Okay? That's the hang-up. You need direct physical loss or direct physical damage to the property at the premises, and without that, the business income coverage doesn't apply, even if there's a suspension of operations. Businesses' operations are suspended all the time for a variety of reasons. The trick here is determining which of those reasons apply to get coverage under this policy, and the ones that apply to gain coverage involve direct physical loss or damage to property that causes the suspension of the operations.
Counsel, you're less than 2 minutes left if you want to reserve anything for rebuttal.
I would like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. DiCello.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, counsel. My name is Nick DiCello. I will be presenting oral argument on behalf of and represent Nero Communication Services, Inc., doing business as Hearing Innovations. It's an audiology practice in Northeast Ohio. I'd like to start by focusing on the posture of this case. This case is before this court on a certified question of law. And the question is compound. It was drafted by lawyers and is 52 words long. But within that question is whether or not the presence of the SARS COVID-2 coronavirus at, in, and on insured property and premises results in direct physical loss or damage to property, as that undefined phrase and those undefined terms can be reasonably interpreted.
Counsel, anything that's associated with the virus, we now know becomes harmless upon surface within hours, as was mentioned, or at least, you know, an expiration of time, correct?
I don't know that the record identifies what that time is at any given premises on any given property, Your Honor. Furthermore, as we know, these particles, they're physical. There's no doubt, no one is disputing, although we all wish they were not, they're physical particles that have a physical manifestation. They can be measured, they can be calculated.
And also be wiped away, as is evidenced by, you know, what took place before this podium was used. That it's, you know, in, what's the difference between the virus particles, if you want to call them that, and a stain from, you know, a mold or some other occurrence, either inside or outside of a building, which case law does not equate with physical damage, correct?
Thank you for the question, Judge. I do disagree with the last half, but let me address the first part of your question and answer all of your questions. Someone did, thankfully, come up and wipe off this lectern before I stood up to speak. However, I'm emitting particles as I speak now that have recontaminated this very lectern with whatever particles I am emitting from my mouth. It has been recontaminated immediately. And if I was COVID positive, I would have immediately recontaminated this property with COVID particles. To differentiate Your Honor's question about a mold stain, and this goes right to the Mastalone case, which we believe supports our claim and supports this court answering the question in the affirmative, is that a non-hazardous mold claim on the exterior of a home does not result in any loss of that structure to its owner.
But if you're COVID positive, it doesn't result in a loss to the podium.
I believe under the reasonable definitions and the in the definitions of the term loss, it can, Your Honor. Those terms are undefined in the policy.
Well, I'm a little confused, and maybe I just misread the record. But my understanding is the business shut down as a result of the orders. So nobody was in the business whatsoever to expose any property to COVID-19. So am I confused, or is that correct? We're really talking about the shutdown period that you are seeking recovery for.
Thank you for the question, Your Honor. The shutdown order, of course, forced this company to shut its doors. However, in the record and in the complaint, there's evidence that before they were forced to shut down, there were patients present on the property who were COVID positive. And if expert discovery were permitted to proceed in this case, there would be expert witness testimony about the likely presence of this harmful virus on the property. And furthermore, with respect to what caused the suspension, you can have concurrent causes, and that can raise issues that maybe Judge Pearson will have to rule upon, but the trigger for coverage is whether or not there is direct physical loss of or damage, direct physical loss or damage to property.
Let me ask, so back to your hypothetical where you were emitting particles on the podium, if you ask someone, an ordinary speaker of the English language, if there was physical loss or physical damage to that podium, what would they say?
If I offered them the reasonable definitions, I think you'd have different interpretations, Judge, just like we're seeing in the...
Do you think anyone would say that that podium has been physically damaged right now?
I think people would say it's been rendered deficient, physically deficient. It's been rendered dangerous. It was previously in a physical state that it could be safely used, and it is now in a physical state that it cannot.
Counsel, it can be returned to the same safe state with minimal effort with a Clorox wipe.
Judge, I don't know that the record allows us to make that broad statement at this point without any evidence.
Well, we're talking about the hypothetical here with the podium that you're contaminating.
Yes, yes, the podium that can be recontaminated. The question is, when does the period of restoration end for this podium?
But how is that damage? I'm struggling with how do you define property damage? It still exists. You wipe it off, it still exists. It's correct. Unmarred, it's unharmed. So I'm struggling with how you define that as property damage.
Well, the trigger is loss or damage, Judge, so either one of those. And I agree, they overlap.
But it's still there, so it's not loss.
Indeed, indeed it is, but it has been rendered deficient. These business owners have been deprived of the effective use of it.
Are you saying that if you render something unusable for a moment in time, that that's damage, that that's a loss?
That's how,
that that's recoverable?
That's how the dictionaries define the term loss. The term loss was defined by the Mastalone Court as a deficiency or being deprived the possession of something, even temporarily.
So if a mirror fogs up for a second and you can't see yourself, then that mirror has been damaged. Mm-hmm. There's been physical loss to that mirror.
It depends on what the use of the mirror is, Judge.
The mirror is usually used to see your reflection.
Right, and I think what Your Honor's getting to is a matter of extent and duration. And the record has not been developed as a matter of extent and duration of the presence of these particles. Let me give the court some analogies. A long list of pre-pandemic cases has held direct physical loss or damage occurs when ammonia gas infiltrates a business. Odorless radon gas, when that infiltrates a business, it constitutes a direct physical loss. Asbestos fibers.
Counsel, a direct physical loss of the business, or it's the deprivation of the use of the business, right?
Right.
The loss is not a physical loss. It's a loss of the use of the business on a temporary basis.
Well, Judge, there's two things in your question, Justice O'Connor. First, case law has said that the infiltration of a dangerous, harmful agent that rises to dangerous levels, mm-hmm. much like the interior mold claim in Mastalone, constitutes direct physical loss or damage to property. The second part of your question is, for how long is there lost business income? There may be none. There may be a lot. That's a separate question after coverage is triggered. So the case law tells us that things like carbon monoxide, if a business is infiltrated with dangerous levels of carbon monoxide and needs to be shut down to restore that building to a safe and healthy state, there's really no debate in the law that that constitutes a direct physical loss or damage to property that triggers coverage. What Cincinnati Insurance Company and its amici are asking this court to do is to graft onto the language of their own policy a structural alteration requirement.
Well, aren't they just asking that we give some meaning to the word physical? I mean, under your argument, physical is completely, there's no need for that. It's superfluous, right?
I respectfully disagree. The definition of physical is having a material existence, perceptible and subject to the laws of nature, and being able to be measured by weight, motion, and resistance. We all agree that the virus is a physical entity. And by way of an example, if I was selling baseballs and I had two balls with me and one was covered with a dangerous physical substance and the other one was not, I think it's fair to say that those two balls are not in the same physical condition until the ball that's covered with dangerous element is restored or repaired. And it could be as simple as wiping off. But then if the conditions at the property are going to expose that same product again to being recontaminated, there's a question that's not developed in the record of how long it will take to restore a property like Hearing Innovations' property to a point where it can be safely used for its intended purposes. And so the other cases that are cited ad nauseum in the briefing include things like arsenic. Cat urine odor has been found to cause direct physical loss or damage to property triggering coverage. As I said, carbon monoxide, asbestos, gas vapors. The policy at issue actually covers gas vapors as a physical loss or damage. It only excludes them if they're the result of certain types of industrial applications. So there you have the presence of potentially odorless, invisible, harmful agent on the property that does not change the physical structure, does not alter the physical structure of any of the property there. And it's expressly insured by this policy.
Well, let's talk about radon, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Radon, can't smell it really, right?
I can't, no. Okay. I don't think so.
No? And it permeates a building? And if it does, then you have to ground up the foundation and stop the radon from coming in from the bottom, right?
Whatever remediation is required.
Or the building is worthless.
Potentially.
So that would be a direct physical damage or loss, right?
Under your hypothetical, yes, but if there's a hypothetical that says the radiation can be fumigated out of the building, then no, you wouldn't require a physical destruction of the actual property or alteration of the property. Another example, Judge, would be carbon monoxide is an odorless, colorless gas. And any business, I don't think Cincinnati Insurance Company is claiming that if there's a carbon monoxide intrusion onto a property, it does not result in a covered
but
loss.
You would have to somehow stop that intrusion, maybe the oven, whatever, the hot water heater, whatever.
Potentially.
Or you have to stop that.
It could be an intrusion from an outside source, Your Honor, over which the insured doesn't have control.
But you'd have to do something to the building then to stop that intrusion.
Or someone outside the building would have to stop the source of that leak. Yes.
But in either case, there is a physical loss.
Correct. The loss of use of the property so long as the invisible gas particulate matter is present on the property.
But there's got to be something done to stop it. Isn't that their argument? You know, repair, replace, whatever.
Well, I think that argument regarding the period of restoration moves past the triggering event, which is what we're really focused on. The physical presence of harmful, dangerous agents in and on business property has always been interpreted to be a direct physical loss to that property. And for how long the lost business income lasts after coverage is triggered depends on this period of restoration, which is defined in the policy to include repair, replacement, or moving to a new site. But the title also includes the word restoration, to restore that property to a safe space. So in our example, where we're talking about carbon monoxide blowing into the front door of my store, I've lost that business, I've lost my property due to a physical dangerous condition on and affecting the property for the period of time until I can restore it to a safe place for people to come in.
Counselor, did you say in the policy it is mentioned coverage for things like what you're talking about specifically for gases and?
Yes. Yes, Judge.
Okay, so that's delineated in the policy by contract.
Well, it's actually delineated in an exclusion. It says physical loss or damage from gas vapors are excluded if they're the result of certain industrial operations.
And your client could have bought a viral addendum to the policy, couldn't it?
No, Judge. In fact, this policy didn't include a virus exclusion.
It didn't include, but you could buy.
I'm unaware of that coverage being available in the marketplace to a business like this at the time. Okay. And Cincinnati Insurance Company could have included a virus exclusion. They do include virus exclusions in some of their policies. And at the record RA08, when you see that, it doesn't say, Mr. Policyholder, this is a belt and suspenders approach. It doesn't change your coverage. In fact, it says just the opposite. It says, read this very carefully. This exclusion for losses due to virus changes and modifies the policy you have. And in closing, I would like to just revisit Mastalone for one moment because it is cited quite a bit. I think it's an appropriate case to cite. And there are two claims. There's an external mold claim that was denied. There was an internal mold claim that both the court and the insurer in that case agreed and held that had the interior mold risen to dangerous levels, that, and I'm paraphrasing, but I am quoting to some extent, that, quote, meets the insurance policy predicate for physical loss. reasserting and agreeing with a long line of cases, Your Honors, that when the intrusion, the physical material intrusion of a dangerous physical element, chemical, or agent rises to dangerous levels, that amounts to a direct physical loss or damage to property. And that's what we have here in the certified question. Can the presence of a lethal, dangerous physical substance on the premises of any given insured, which those could vary, as we've talked about today, Judge, can it cause direct physical loss of or damage to property? And if this court were to answer that in the negative, it would be turning on its head all the claims for radon gas, for carbon monoxide, for fumes, for odor, all the things that don't structurally alter. If Cincinnati Insurance Company wanted a structural alteration requirement, as they and their amici are arguing, it would have been very easy for them to include that in the policy and say the only physical loss or damage that is covered here is when there's a structural alteration to the insured property and premises.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel.
Thank you. I think what we've just heard exemplifies the need to look at words in context. Why is context so important? Well, one is the use of dictionary definitions. If you've got a phrase like this with maybe 10 words or so, if you look up in the dictionary the meanings for those words, this is English. There's multiple dictionary definitions for nearly every English word. We use context to figure that out when we're communicating. We don't carry pocket dictionaries with us and then debate which dictionary definition ought to be applicable to which word in the phrase that I've just uttered. That would be an impediment to communication, to clear and unambiguous communication. The proposition that words should be better defined or be more definitions, that has no end.
Well, counsel, I think one of the last things that Mr. DiCello said was, if you required structural physical damage, and that would be that you could have written that into your policy in a way that would eliminate.
Well, what we require is direct physical loss or damage to property. I prefer to stick with exactly the words that are in the policy, but the courts and the cases understandably and frequently try to tease out the meaning of those words by using other words. I think we all do that. I think that's an appropriate, if not endemic, process in the law. So yes, we're citing those cases, and we certainly believe that those cases have absolutely hit it on the head.
Yes, Counsel, let me ask you this. The fact that this certified question is kind of split into two hypotheticals. One starts with in the general presence of the community, and then it goes or on surfaces. Doesn't that provide this court difficulty in answering yes or no to this question when it could apply to all sorts of different scenarios where coverage could apply or may not apply?
I don't think so for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, if this court follows the majority of courts around the nation, including the ones that I've alluded to earlier, just starting with Santos's. That will establish the legal meaning of this phrase in this and many other similar contracts. That establishment is the perfect starting point to address the concern that you just raised. With regard to the virus being generally around the community within our nation, much less within Ohio, I think that's appropriate to look at on the law side from the perspective of common sense, which comes from the cases like the Alexander case and others that stress the need not to make rulings that define words in such a way that it leads to absurd results. I would maintain it's an absurd result to say that the general presence of germs in our physical world means that there's coverage under a property insurance policy. That would be extraordinary, yet that's the gist of that claim, and we just heard it.
Mr. Litchfield, Mitchell, over here to your right. Does it matter that this was an all-risk policy and not a named perils policy?
You beat me to it. The words all-risk are a label, describing a type of insurance product. They actually don't appear in this policy anywhere. You can pull it up and do a keyword search and you won't find all risk anywhere in it. Now, what you will find is that there's no coverage in the first instance unless there is direct physical loss or damage to property. If there is, then it's appropriate to move on and look at various exclusions if applicable, if appropriate. If there isn't, we're done. There's no coverage. I think the suggestion that this is an all-risk policy is really used to get beyond the label. And it's not even the title of this policy. The effort is to wipe out the requirement that there be direct physical loss or damage to property by saying, oh, it's an all-risk policy. So it covers everything unless excluded. But that's actually not what it says. That's skipping the very important point, which is what we're here for, which is the gist and the core of the certified question, that there has to be direct physical loss or damage to property. So calling it an all-risk policy doesn't change that analysis, doesn't change that language in the policy, doesn't change the importance of applying that language in the policy and applying it under the plain meaning rule so that we don't have absurd results resulting from the interpretation of the contract.
So does it follow that some of the exclusions that were developed in the industry nationwide after the SARS outbreak, where particular language was crafted and it started appearing in policies around the country, the fact that it's not in here fits within the explanation you just gave me, correct?
It absolutely does, and we do address that in an unforgivably long footnote, and I apologize in the reply brief, but we shouldn't have to go past the unambiguous language, direct physical loss or damage to property. But since it's been raised and EMISI have put these things into this record, we did point out that, among other things, the circular that was filed by ISO, not by Cincinnati. ISO is a for-profit company that Cincinnati does purchase services from. Since the circular that came with the ISO virus exclusion was filed with the Ohio Department of Insurance, we had, in an earlier case down in Cincinnati, obtained an affidavit from the former head of the Ohio Department of Insurance. And what she indicated was, from that perspective, the regulator's perspective, that circular wasn't saying you need a virus exclusion not to have coverage. And she pointed out the exact language in the circular that said it's not thought that there's any coverage for this, but it is anticipated that aggressive litigants may try to access coverage that was never intended. And if that concerns you, here's an exclusion you can put on the policy. It's right there, it's in the record, it's in black and white, and I would encourage everybody to look at it.
Thank you.
Thank you,
gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you call a recess, please?
All rise.